Band sounds great. It's a great way to start the morning, isn't it? As I'm reading, would you listen for the word of God? Two are better than one because they have a good return for their hard work. If either should fall, one can pick up the other. But how miserable are those who fall and don't have a companion to help them up? Also, if two lie down together, they can stay warm. But how can anyone stay warm alone? Also, one can be overpowered, but two together can put up resistance. A three-ply cord doesn't easily snap. Here ends the reading of God's holy word. Praise be to God. Would you pray with me? God, we've come seeking a deeper communion with you. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our blessed Redeemer. Amen.
Human beings were created with this amazing capacity for love, relationships, and intimacy. But it's complicated today. There's no single model for the perfect relationship. Yet the Bible does have something to say about dating, marriage, sexuality, and intimacy, and how we can best love and respect one another and ourselves. It's time to take a grown-up look at the birds and the bees.
Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Neen. I'm the senior pastor of Resurrection United Methodist Church. If you're watching online, we're glad that you're part of our extended worshiping congregation. If you're here in the sanctuary, you can reach into your bulletin and pull out a GPS, a Grow, Pray, and Study guide. There's a place for taking notes. It's also a tool that you can use to develop your own deeper sense of awareness of God's presence in your life. So I hope that you're developing a daily quiet time. We started last week on a new sermon series we call The Birds and the Bees, and we're looking at a biblical perspective of these intimate relationships that we humans want to have and desire. We talked last week about dating and how the decisions that we make in dating really lay the foundation or don't lay the foundation for a successful relationship. And so today we're going to take the next step and we're going to look at what are some of the qualities that long-term successful relationships have in common. I remember 12 years ago, I know this because the age of my daughter, she was 10 at the time, Johanna, and Sue and I raised four kids, so sometimes we'd have to do split duty, and it was one of those Sunday afternoons where I had Johanna, and I was going over to a couple's house, and they were having a celebration at the house, and so Joey and I are walking down this dirt road together, and she says, well, what are we celebrating today, Dad? And I said, well, Jim and June are celebrating 40 years of being married together. She was quiet, and she said, well, what else have they done? Well, I mean, clearly Joey wasn't at that point where she really understood what goes into a 40-year marriage and making that successful, and that's kind of what we're talking about right now. What does go into a successful 40-year marriage? The text that I just read to you, that was the text from Sue and my wedding in Ecclesiastes, and King Solomon is who we credit for writing Ecclesiastes, and he's talking, if you go further back in chapter 4, about what it's like to be alone, and how difficult it is to be alone, and how nice it is to have a companion, somebody who has your back, somebody that if you fall down will help you get back up, someone who will help keep you warm, and somebody who will be your friend through the highs and lows of life. And then he switches gears. He's talking about these companions, either your spouse or your good friend. And then he says, a three-ply cord doesn't easily snap. Well, all of a sudden he jumps. Where's that third ply coming from? He's talking about faith, how much stronger our relationships are when we have a shared faith in a common God. Now, we looked at the statistics for divorce as of 2016 last week, and it's clear that many cords are snapping. The divorce statistics for 2016, first-time marriage, 50%, second-time marriage, 67%, third-time marriage, 73%. These statistics are so overwhelming that many young people are giving up on the idea of marriage. And I want to turn that around and say, it isn't the fault of marriage that marriage isn't working out. Beginning with last week, what we looked at, the thing that's changed is how we meet, how we date, how we relate to one another, leading into marriage. Last week we talked about how the incidence of living together, premarital sex and living together, exactly parallels the increase in divorce. Do you remember the statistics? Just absolutely follow one another. And so we talked a little bit last week about how it seems that when physical relationship precedes looking at the relationship qualities that are necessary, we can end up marrying somebody who maybe we're physically compatible with, but we aren't relationally compatible with. There are far more people that we're physically compatible with than we are relationally compatible. So, what are the things that help two human beings enter into a long-term relationship and have a, not just survive, but really thrive in that relationship? We can learn from other people on that. Number one is this idea within the Christian faith of the difference between contract and covenant. Now, in the state of Minnesota, you'll get a $125, I believe, discount on your marriage license if you go through long-term, rigorous premarital counseling. Why? Because the state of Minnesota has such a generous heart? No, they're saving money. The reason they give that discount is because people that go through that rigorous premarital counseling are far less likely, statistically, to divorce, and that saves the state of Minnesota on court costs. So in our church, we don't charge for premarital counseling. Your offerings make us available, and then people have to meet with me for 6 to 8 weeks. And one of the things that we're talking about during that period of time is the difference between having a contract with somebody and having a covenant. Now, a contract is something that you enter into with somebody if you want your plumbing fixed or if you want to build a house. And if one party, the other party, doesn't meet the terms of that covenant or that contract, then you can break the contract or you'll end up in court. It's based on services rendered. And the fact is that when you enter into a live-in relationship, you're operating under a spoken or unspoken live-in contract. As long as you make me happy, as long as I make you happy, as long as whatever services you're believing that need to be rendered in a relationship for you are being met, I'm in this thing. But if that seems to taper off, I'm out of here. I'm not going to stay in the relationship any longer. A covenant, on the other hand, is dictated by God. The terms are dictated by God. We don't come up with the terms ourselves. We either enter into the covenant or not. Think of the Ten Commandments. You either accept the Ten Commandments or you don't accept the Ten Commandments, but you don't quibble with God about the Ten Commandments. You know, I like six of them, but four of them I'd like to, you know, get rid of. God's not negotiating with us. God's saying, if you enter into this covenant, the results of being faithful to this covenant are blessings and success. And if not, your odds are you're not going to be successful. Well, the same is true. Marriage is a covenant. The terms are dictated by God. Couples that come into the church and want to get married in a Christian covenant, they need to understand what that covenant is, what they're promising to do. And one of the things, if you look really carefully at the marriage vows, are you're not promising the other person. Promises are being made, but the bride is not promising the groom, and the groom is not promising the bride. The bride is promising God how she's going to deal with this guy. The groom is promising God how he's going to treat this woman. It's a very high ideal that none of us hit, but that doesn't mean that we get rid of it. Like, we don't get rid of the Ten Commandments because they're hard to keep. It's a high standard that keeps pulling us up. So the reason that's important is it's guaranteed that you're going to, at some point in your relationship, be very disappointed with your spouse. Ask anybody that's been married for more than 30 minutes, are you always happy with your spouse? I mean, the whole idea of living together being based on as long as we're happy is false. We're not always going to be happy. Love does not protect the marriage contract or covenant. The marriage covenant is intended to protect love. Help it get through those seasons when we're not feeling it. When we're in a low spot waiting for the next high spot. So if you look at the difference between contract and covenant, see, a contract is an agreement between equals. It's based on mistrust. Therefore, we get into one for our protection, and it's time-bound. Versus a covenant, which is an agreement with God. It's not equal in human beings. It's based on love and commitment, and it affects not only our generation, but generations that follow. Isn't that interesting? So we started talking last week. I want to continue talking a little bit more about, just from a sociological standpoint, why living together really isn't working. We have this concept in the 12-step world where, how's that working for you? Well, we saw the statistics before. 50% first-time marriage. Show that slide again. 50% first time, 67% divorce second time, 73% third. George Gallup said this: if divorce were a physical disease, we'd declare a national emergency. It's not working for us. Whatever we're doing right now that's preparing us for a long-term relationship, it's not working. I specifically pulled statistics that come from universities, not from any Christian organization, because I don't want you to think that these statistics are biased. They're based on the census. So, first quote, from Columbia University study, those who live together before marriage are least likely to marry. Here's the actual: 26% of women surveyed and 19% of men married the person with whom they were living. 1/4 of the women who are living with somebody right now will actually marry that person. 1/5 of the men that are currently living with somebody will actually marry that person. Or 40% of cohabitating relationships will break up without that couple getting married. See, we look at living together as a trial marriage. Next statistic. It's from Yale University, a national survey of families and households, which is really a census survey. Those who live together before marriage have higher separation of divorce rates. That seems counterintuitive, right? If it's a trial marriage, then really what we should be doing is those who have lived together should have more successful relationships. If the shoe fits. But that's not statistically what happens. What Yale University found out, women were 80% more likely to separate and divorce than women who had not lived with their spouses before marriage. 80%. If a woman lives with a man before she gets married, she's 80% more likely to get divorced than if she doesn't live with that man. From the National Survey of Family and Households, they found that unions begun with cohabitation are twice as likely to dissolve within 10 years as those compared to all first-time marriage. The difference was 57% divorce rate for those who lived together before marriage versus a 30% divorce rate for those who did not live together before marriage. Does that surprise you? Why do you think that is? This is what the pros think. The pros think that the contract that men and women have when they're living together is, I'm with you as long as I feel like this is working out. But if at some point when it's just become clear, I don't feel the same way about you that I used to feel about, maybe there's somebody I'm more interested in, I'm out of here. Even though those couples go through a marriage ceremony, they still in the back of their heads have that same individualistic perspective on their marriage. So if the contract was before, if it's not working, I'm out of here. After they get married, if it's not working, I'm out of here. Third, those who are sexually active before marriage are more likely to divorce. University of Maryland. This isn't that great for men, this statistic. It says, those who have premarital sex are more likely to have extramarital affairs. 90% of married men are faithful to their spouses. Way to go, guys. But only 43% of cohabitating men are faithful. 57% of cohabitating men cheat on the woman that they're living with. The lie is that living together is a trial marriage. The truth is that living together is a trial divorce. That when you live together, you're practicing breaking up. You're not practicing how to make a relationship work in the long term. That covenant seems to be very important in making long-term successful relationships. Next. Couples that have long-term successful relationships persevere with one another. The text, so chosen by God for this new life of love, dress in the wardrobe God picked out for you, compassion, kindness, humility, quiet strength, discipline, be even-tempered, content with second place, quick to forgive an offense, forgive as quickly and completely as the Master forgave you, and regardless of whatever you put on, wear love. It's your basic all-purpose garment. Never be without it. Couples that have long-term successful relationships persevere in love. This love that is a decision. I've been a pastor for 31 years. These are the people that I've married so far. One, two, three. So it's around 140 couples that I've done premarital counseling for. And one of the things that I was taught to do was ask couples to go with an interview sheet and talk to couples that they respect, who they think have good marriages, and they've been married for more than 10 years. So they're past the honeymoon, water has gone under the bridge, and they give you an honest assessment of what makes a successful marriage work. And one of the questions that they ask is, have you ever thought about being divorced? If yes, why did you stay together? So if I knew that I was giving this sermon 31 years ago, I would have kept little slash marks. I'm just going to have to give you a conservative estimate on what I've heard over these last 31 years from these couples who are interviewing their parents, they're interviewing their grandparents, they're interviewing people that they really respect these relationships. So they think these people have it going on in their relationship. And the vast majority of people come back and they tell me, after they've asked that question, yes, we have thought about divorce and we've contemplated divorce in their relationship. But they're really surprised that grandpa and grandma thought about getting divorced. I had no idea. So then the follow-up question is, why didn't you? Some people say, for the kids' sake, or you know, something like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's very altruistic to try to provide and to do the best thing that you can for your kids. But the number one answer on why people didn't get divorced is because, and they use it in different language, but it all kind of boils down to the same thing. I made a promise because of the ring. I believe in marriage. It goes back to point number one, the idea of covenant. The whole point of this is couples that stay together aren't that much different than couples that don't stay together. You would think that couples that stay together don't have problems, and couples that don't stay together have a lot of problems, but the reality is in these interviews, the two groups have pretty much the same problems. It's whether you can weather the storm or not. Because every long-term relationship has those storms. Sue and I had the worst premarital counseling ever in the history of humanity. It was terrible. I can remember the youth, we were directed to the youth pastor. And I remember him there with his red high-top Converse tennis shoes. And we began, the only thing that I really got out of it was he said, you need to make a commitment that before you would divorce, after 6 months of trying to solve something, you'll go to see a counselor. And that really turned out to be valuable advice, because I think for most of us, we get into those situations where we're just not agreeing. And I say this, and then she says this, and then I say this back, and then she says this back, and we get into this thing, and pretty soon after a while, you're just ready to throw up. And what's needed is a third person, a competent third person who can sit down and break it up and ask pointed questions and help people to see things from a different perspective. When you hit one of those points in the road where you're really frustrated with the other, the why in the road is this. Either we keep trying what we've been doing, knowing that in the past it hasn't worked, and either we're going to go through our marriage with a limp, handicapped because of this thing we can't solve, or divorce, or we're going to go and try and get help, we're going to become more self-reflective, and ultimately, even though it can be pretty dark going through this, on the other side we can be stronger as a couple and better people in the end. One of the things that people notice in long-term relationships is they don't go through less trials, they know how to persevere through the storm. The third thing, it has to do with respect. I pointed out to you last week that in the marriage ceremony, the word love is almost never used, but the word honor, respect, value is used a lot. When you're exchanging rings in the Christian marriage ceremony, you say this: I give you this ring as a sign of my vow, with all that I am and all that I have, I honor you. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It doesn't say I love you. It says I value you. I respect you. Now, those of you who have been married for a while, have you always shown respect to your spouse? How do you show respect? Well, actually, we looked at this last week. 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, verses 4 through 8a. It's a great way to show respect, and it's a decision we do. We don't do this because we feel like it. We do this because it's the right thing to do. This is called chesed love. So it looks like hesed, but if you're going to say it right, you got to say it like you got a goober in your throat. Hesed. And what hesed is mature love. It's loyalty, it's faithfulness, it's long-suffering, it's kindness, it's tender mercies, it's truth. It literally means it's covenant-keeping. I'm keeping my promise. Go back to 1 Corinthians 13. So I want to go through this again with you this week, but this time I want it to be a self-test. I don't want you to be thinking, well, he's never patient, he's never kind. I want you to do a self-test, and I want you to ask yourself, am I these things in my marriage? Are you patient? Patient means to slow down to the other person's pace when they can't go as fast as you. Or do you beat them up because they need to pick it up? Kind. Are you kind? Kindness means that kindness is love's response when you see weakness in the other person. They're not good at this thing. Do you avoid jealousy? Do you not talk a lot about yourself? Are you not proud and thinking that you're kind of all that? When was the last time you were rude to your spouse? Are you self-seeking? Are you thinking more about yourself than you're thinking about the success of the relationship? Do you fly off the handle? Act disrespectfully that way? Do you keep a record of wrongs? Do you just kind of mumble those around in your head? And you're ready to just dump it out anytime it's necessary to just show you what a miserable person you are. It's actually a manner of control. Are you delighting in evil, or are you welcoming the truth? Are you a person that's protecting? Are you trusting? Are you hoping? Are you persevering in this relationship, or are you looking for an escape hatch? This is a great way when we're trying to figure out how to treat the other person respectfully. And most times, for most of us, when we look at that, you say, fail, 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 fail. Ouch, 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 ouch. Okay, it's the standard. It's a good standard. We have feet of clay. Part of finding a way to reverse the divorce thing is to not beat ourselves up for what's past, but decide what we're going to do in the future. So why bother getting married? Right? If it's so hard. Because inherently we know as human beings that there is a certain type of love that we can only experience when we entered into this covenant, for better, for worse, for richer, for poor, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish until death do us part. I honestly equate it to war. It's the way you feel about people that you went to war with. And when you're going through it, it's tremendously difficult. You get mad at each other and you get frustrated at each other. But when the war is over and you look back, you're so proud. This person was in the trench with me and they did not drop their pack. They had my back. We got through this together. And you have this tremendous sense of pride and thankfulness that can only come through this type of covenant. That's why we get married. Amen?